This is Iowa Public Radio. Talk of Iowa will not be presented today so that we may bring you live coverage of the condition of the state address from Governor Chet Culver. Our coverage today is courtesy of Iowa Public Television. The coverage will be anchored by Iowa Public Radio and Iowa Public Television's Dean Borg. The governor says his speech will focus on job creation, such as funding community college training programs and supporting the Iowa Power Fund, which pays for alternative energy projects. We will bring you the entire speech, and again, Dean Borg will be anchoring the coverage live from the State House in Des Moines. And following the broadcast at 11 o'clock, it's Fresh Air. Now to the State House and coverage from Iowa Public Radio and TV's Dean Borg.
Good morning. I'm Dean Borg. This is the House Chamber at the Iowa State House in Des Moines, where the Iowa Senate and the House of Representatives are in joint session right now, waiting for Governor Culver's condition of the state address. This address is draped in ceremony each year, this year particularly significant because of the difficult time. The condition of the state is particularly under close watch right now, particularly the fiscal condition, intensely monitored. What's happening now is that dignitaries are being escorted into the chamber. We've had, just a few minutes ago, the members of the Iowa Supreme Court, Marsha Turnus, the Chief Justice, members of the Supreme Court and Court of Appeals, the Iowa Executive Council, also seated just a few minutes ago. Those are the elected members of the executive branch of state government, Attorney General Tom Miller, Treasurer Michael Fitzgerald, Auditor David Vaught, and Secretary of State Michael Morrow, along with Agriculture Secretary Bill Northey. And the governor, I'm told, is at the door and will be hearing from the sergeant-at-arms, Mr. Boatwright, who will announce the governor's arrival.
Convention will be in order. The chair recognizes the sergeant-at-arms.
Mr. President, your committee to escort Chester J. Culver has arrived.
The committee will escort the Honorable Chet Culver to the rostrum.
Boatwright announcing the governor's arrival. He's being escorted into the chamber by a delegation of six legislators, three from the House, three from the Senate, who went down two floors below this House chamber to the governor's office and escorting him now for the annual condition of the state address. He's approaching the well where the dignitaries are seated. I mentioned earlier, Mary Culver is here, along with their two children, John and Claire. The governor now going to the podium, ready to deliver what could be the defining speech of his political career. He'll be introduced by the Senate President, Jack Kibbe of Emmitsburg.
The judges of a court of appeals will be escorted to their seats. Welcome, everyone. I've been asked that be sure that all the aisles are cleared in the balconies, fire marshal's orders, and so it is my pleasure to introduce our governor, Chet Culver, for his condition of the state message to the 2010 session of the 83rd General Assembly. Please welcome our great governor.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, folks. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you, folks. Thank you. Thank you. Please, thank you very much. A special welcome to Chief Justice Ternus, members of the court, my fellow statewide elected officials, my extremely capable partner and friend, Lieutenant Governor Patty Judge, Speaker Murphy, Leader McCarthy, President Kibbe, Leader Gronstall, and Leaders Paulson and McKinley. And to the members of the General Assembly, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to address you this morning. It is my privilege to be here. I'm happy to be with you for this extraordinary 80-day session. There's much to do and no time to waste. We face some real challenges, one we did not create, but ones we will overcome. On the one hand, we continue to recover from the natural disasters, which are historic in their scope, the fourth worst natural disaster in our history. Additionally, the ongoing national recession continues to affect every Iowa family, every Iowa business, and every aspect of our state government. But as Iowans, we continue to address these challenges head on with resilience, optimism, determination, and good old-fashioned hard work. We're also a people of great faith, a faith that teaches us, with God's help, all things are possible. With God's help, all things are possible. With perseverance, there's nothing we cannot endure, and there's no challenge that together we cannot overcome. These are Iowa values that we can all embrace, regardless of what part of the state we come from, our political views, or our station in life. You see, despite the obstacles that sometimes get in the way, Iowans continue to look forward, not backward. They believe, as I do, that the 21st century will be Iowa's century. So for these reasons, I'm happy to report the condition of the state is resilient because the people of Iowa are resilient. We have never stopped in our work for the people we have the honor to represent. For example, to address both the statewide challenges, the double challenges related to the economy, related to our natural disaster, you passed and I signed last session, iJobs, our statewide infrastructure and job creation initiative. A yes vote on iJobs was a yes vote for flood victims. A yes vote on iJobs was a vote to rebuild our economy. A yes vote on iJobs was a vote for businesses and communities as they struggle across our state to get back on their feet. So I want to be very clear. I'm proud of the fact that we've made the difficult decisions necessary to put our state on the road to recovery. I'm proud of the fact that on my watch, we've earned the highest possible bond rating for good fiscal management. I'm proud of the fact that we've balanced the budget 3 years in a row without raising taxes on hardworking Iowans. And speaking of the budget, some politicians and armchair quarterbacks appear to be confused about our current budget situation. Well, let's end the confusion. Here are the facts. Today, the budget is balanced, and it has been balanced every single day that I have had the privilege to be the governor of this state. Additionally, because of our cost savings initiatives, the budget this morning is smaller than the one it was on the day that I took office. And this didn't happen, as you know, by accident. It happened because we've made the tough choices. We managed the budget responsibly and effectively. Here are the 10 steps that I've taken to successfully manage our state through this economic downturn. First, starting in 2008, I cut spending 3%, froze state hiring, cut employee travel, and reduced the state's health care insurance costs by $20 million. In 2009, I instituted a lean government initiative to further cut spending by 10%. This saved $500 million. In addition, I cut my own pay 10%, ordered State Department directors to do the same, and mandated that 3,500 non-contract employees in the executive branch take furlough days. In addition, to further cut cost, I signed Executive Order Number 20 to improve efficiency, eliminate redundancies, and identify wasteful spending. This order will save up to $140 million next year and over $500 million during the next 5 years. Then, we took a huge step. We successfully negotiated a cost and job savings agreement with two of our state's largest unions, the state police officers and AFSCME. Fortunately, their members agreed to share in the sacrifice for the greater good. So I want to salute Danny Holman of AFSCME and Mark Bolin of SPOC and their members for these historic measures. This demonstrates when Iowans come to the table in good faith, we can meet our challenges. Finally, we've done all of these things to balance the budget while protecting our priorities in renewable energy, workforce development, early childhood education, health care for our kids, and public safety. But there's another priority we must always find time to fund. And the money, I should say, to fund. As you know, in the coming months, 3,500 men and women of the Iowa National Guard will be deployed to Afghanistan. As the Commander-in-Chief of the Guard, it is my duty, both morally and legally, to make sure that these fighting Iowans are prepared for service. The 3,500 troops represent the largest single overseas deployment since World War II. So we must give them every tool they need to complete their mission and come home safely. These brave men and women have earned our support. That's why I'm asking you today to pass a supplemental appropriations bill early this session to restore some of the cuts to the Department of Public Defense. No family better understands the importance of preparation and training than the Mills family of Altoona. Captain Tim Mills is now deployed in Iraq. His wife, Mary, and their children are with us today. She's joined by Adjutant General Tim Orr and our leader of the National Guard. So please join me in thanking both of them and their families for their sacrifice and for their service. Now I want to talk about next year's budget. The budget I will submit at the end of the month will be balanced, and it will reflect our values as Iowans. Here are my top legislative priorities for 2010. Number one, my top priority is jobs. Job creation, job retention, they are both incredibly important. So I'm asking you to fully fund community college job training programs and to adequately fund the Department of Workforce Development so that we can keep these workforce development offices open all across the state and give people the services that they need during these challenging times. And to create more green-collar jobs of the future, I ask you to fully fund the Iowa Power Fund once again. In addition, to help create more jobs, invest further in our infrastructure, stimulate our economy, and continue our flood recovery efforts, I look forward to working with all of you to best allocate the remaining $100 million of our iJobs initiative in fiscal year 11. Number two, I'm asking you to enact the remaining recommendations contained in my government efficiency report. This will require legislative approval, and it will allow us to save more than $200 million next year and nearly $1 billion over the next 5 years. These are common sense ideas which will allow us to streamline state government operations, offer early retirement to some state employees, and a four-day work week perhaps to others. It will allow us to implement strategic purchasing across the entire enterprise of state government, reduce our state vehicle fleet, and eliminate redundant and unnecessary information technology services. Number three, finding efficiencies in state government is only the first step. A major reorganization of state government needs to be the next. So I believe it's time for all of us to rethink the way that state government does business. Let me be clear. We're talking about real reform for the 21st century, not just short-term cost savings. This will move us closer to the kind of smarter, more efficient government that is our goal and that Iowa taxpayers deserve. So I look forward to working with you this session to get this done. Fourth, last session you passed and I signed recovery assistance that offered both immediate and long-term help for Iowans affected by the floods. This included funding the Rebuild Iowa office, which, thanks to Lieutenant General Ron Dardis' leadership, was recently recognized as being a national model for effective flood recovery. So I'm asking you to fully fund once again the Rebuild Iowa office next year. Here's why. The office has helped us successfully secure $3.6 billion in state and federal money to help Iowans rebuild from the devastation of the storms and tornadoes last year. And our efforts are working. For example, 3,000 Iowans who lost their homes are now guaranteed the funds necessary to buy a new one. Finally, I hope that we can work together to commit a significant portion of the remaining iJobs funding specifically for flood recovery projects across this state. Fifth, I respectfully ask you to explore every option available, including transferring money from the road fund to ensure that we adequately fund the Iowa State Patrol and the Department of Public Safety. We've done it before, and I believe we can do it again. Six, as you know, in an effort to save taxpayer money and increase transparency, we have recently completed a thorough review of all tax credits in Iowa. Last week, the Tax Credit Review Panel issued their report. So I ask you to act on their recommendations and do all you can to make these credits work exactly as the legislature intended. Seven, let's talk about honoring our most important responsibility as Iowans. That is our duty as parents and as shepherds of our children's future. And speaking of children, my two wonderful kids, John and Claire, are here with us this morning, along with the First Lady, and I would ask that you welcome them to the chamber. You know, I'm proud of the fact that working together, we've made a long-term investment in the health and education of all of our children in this state. Just think, despite the challenges that we've had in the last 3 years, we have extended health insurance to 52,000 kids in Iowa. This investment now makes Iowa number one in the nation when it comes to insuring our children. Together, this session, we must continue this important investment. Additionally, we must also do all we can to expand access to early childhood education across Iowa. To date, we have helped more than 12,000 kids in 175 school districts get a quality preschool education that will prepare them well for this competitive 21st century economy. So my budget request will include the last installment of our four-year, $60 million commitment to preschool. Number eight, in order to ensure that all Iowans can compete in this new global economy, today I ask you to quickly pass legislation required to allow Iowa to compete for federal Race to the Top funds. Iowa stands to receive up to $175 million. This will allow us to be more innovative in the classroom, build the education infrastructure that our students need, turn around underperforming schools, and allow more parental choice. Let's make sure Iowa doesn't miss out on this great opportunity for our students. Let's make sure Iowa remains on the cutting edge in education reform. 9. I'm asking you to pass legislation that requires school districts to spend down a portion of their cash reserves instead of shifting the burden to local property taxpayers. Number 10, as governor and as a former teacher, my commitment to education transcends even our most difficult budget challenges. So in my budget, I will fully fund allowable growth at 2%. That's right. We're not only going to set it, we're going to fund it this session. And on top of that, I will be asking you to dedicate at least $100 million from the reserves to restore some of the recent cuts to our K through 12 schools. This will be a real short-term shot in the arm for some of our schools, especially in rural districts, which are already cash-strapped with depleted reserves. Additionally, I want us to do all we can to support our community colleges, private colleges, and Regents institutions. We have some of the best in the country, and they've also earned our support. And speaking of the best in the country, wasn't it great for Iowa State and Iowa to win those bowl games this year? I want to congratulate the coaches, the players, the fans for all of their support. And it was a great thing for our state to have those two teams win during the bowl season. Speaking of, I want to welcome to the chamber President Joffrey from Iowa State University, Dave Miles, and Bonnie Campbell, two members of the Board of Regents, and thank the three of them for their terrific service to our state as well. So as you can see, we have a lot of ground to cover in a very short period of time this session. But as I've said, nothing we do here is more important than doing our part to help create and retain good-paying private sector jobs. And speaking of jobs, now I want to recognize and thank those of you who had the courage and foresight to stand up and join me in passing our iJobs initiative and infrastructure last session. This was a very important step. Let's remember what iJobs did and why Iowans across the state support it. iJobs is a bill that is fair and equitable. Every county in this state will receive funds which local leaders can dedicate to high priority infrastructure projects of their own choice. And the process of getting the funds to each of our 99 counties is transparent and merit-based. The bipartisan board is comprised of Iowans who have volunteered their time and expertise with one goal in mind, to award iJobs funds according to the letter and the spirit of the law. Because in Iowa, we don't use public funds to build bridges to nowhere. We also have a little bit of history here. Past administrations, including most recently Governors Branstad and Vilsack, have used their constitutional authority to bond for capital investment. But iJobs is an investment in Iowa's future, which is unprecedented in its scope. The iJobs bonds will be paid back at a historically low interest rate through gaming revenue, and not by raising taxes. Not one penny of iJobs funds will be used for state operating costs. In other words, we're not bonding to pay our bills. In the short term, iJobs is creating jobs. In the long term, it will strengthen our economy and allow us to speed up our flood recovery efforts. We have made a major investment through iJobs to modernize our entire state infrastructure, to improve our rail, road, and bridge system, to rebuild from the worst floods in Iowa history, to improve water quality, and to protect our state and our communities from future disasters. Additionally, it will allow us to invest in our renewable energy and telecommunications network across the state. Through iJobs, we've kept our promise to the men and women who served in the military by expanding and renovating the Iowa Veterans Home in Marshalltown. When the renovation is complete, we will have the nicest, the most advanced 21st century veterans home in America, and our veterans deserve it. Here are some of the examples of what iJobs means for Iowans. In Linn and Loayza counties, some of our hardest hit areas, there are currently 54 iJobs projects underway for a total of investment of nearly $100 million. In Butler County, where Parkersburg was hit, where the F5 tornado devastated that community, there are 14 separate iJobs projects underway at close to $3 million. This list is long. As I've said, every single county in this state will benefit from iJobs. We now have approved more than 1,400 projects and invested more than $530 million statewide. These things matter. Just ask the people impacted by the floods. Ask the people of Charles City and Elkader what they think of their new fire station after the two they had before were lost in the floods. Or the people of Fort Dodge and Perry, whose community colleges will be renovated because of iJobs. Finally, we've used iJobs funds to help complete the University of Iowa's, to help them find the funds and secure the funds they need to help them with their flood recovery efforts. Because of our $100 million commitment, they have now secured $750,000 in needed federal funds to help them rebuild Hancher Auditorium and 11 others that were lost because of the floods. So, we are literally rebuilding our state and our economy at the same time. And this focus on building for the long haul is now paying big dividends. We now have the 8th fastest growing economy in the United States. Number 8. We were recently recognized as being the 4th best place in America to do business, up from number 9 last year. And Iowa now is number 1 in the nation in terms of low cost for doing business of all 50 states. There's more. Two weeks ago, according to MarketWatch, Des Moines was named the number 1 city in America to do business. These aren't just statistics. They are the tools we will need to help us continue to attract good-paying jobs to Iowa. and encourage existing companies to expand here. As an example, I'm proud of the fact that we've worked very hard to bring some new jobs to this state. 3,500 new good-paying jobs at companies like Google in Council Bluffs, Aviva in West Des Moines, and IBM in Dubuque. These are exciting projects, but they're just the tip of the iceberg. Since 2007, private industry has brought more than $7 billion in new capital investment to our state. Our business climate, even during this difficult recession, continues to outperform our neighbors, putting us on a clear path to recovery. So, in an effort to make sure we do all we can to continue to keep Iowa moving forward and prepare our state for a bright economic future, I am going to join the Lieutenant Governor over the next several weeks on an Iowa jobs tour to do all we can to highlight some of the great things that are happening, to talk to local business leaders and industry leaders about what more we can do to keep Iowa's economy moving forward. And speaking of the future, let's talk about building the green-collar economy of tomorrow. Today, there are more than 8,000 new green-collar jobs in Iowa. And through the Power Fund, we now have invested in 26 exciting research and development projects in places like Ames and Shenandoah. These second and third generation renewable energy projects will help us secure our energy future. They've also attracted more than $200 million in private capital because of the interest in so many of these breakthrough technologies. So the Power Fund is allowing us to fast become the Silicon Prairie of the Midwest and the renewable energy capital of the United States. We are now leading the way, generating 15% of all of our power from renewable sources. And in just a few short years, Iowa will become one of the only states in the nation to be a net exporter of energy. In closing, I believe that we should never lose sight of the fact that everything we do here in these chambers are about real people. Those people are counting on us every day for help, especially now. As I've said, the people of our state are resilient. Let me give you two very powerful examples of Iowans overcoming adversity. Charlene Schertz is one of too many people in Cedar Rapids who lost everything in the floods. She had 6 feet of water in her home, and it was a total loss. But now, I'm happy to report that she is one of 3,000 Iowans eligible for a home buyout, which means soon Charlene will be in her new home where she belongs. And Cindy Ecker. Cindy is a small business owner from Waverly, and her life changed forever in June of 2008 when the floods destroyed her floral business. But I'm happy to report she's back in business, and she's one of more than 1,000 small business owners who benefited from our successful Jumpstart Iowa Business Program. Charlene and Cindy are with us today. Will you please join me in recognizing them here in the chamber? So what have we learned from these resilient Iowans? We've learned that the spirit of Iowans is unbroken, regardless of the adversity we may face. So as we enter a new decade, approach a new session, and craft a new budget, we have some fundamental choices in spite of some real challenges which remain. Will we move this state forward by reforming and reorganizing state government? Will we continue to be a leader in renewable energy and green-collar job creation and stay on the path to economic recovery? Will we continue to make investments in our kids by expanding access to health care and adequately funding early childhood education and education at all levels? Will we fight for the men and women who wear the uniform of the United States military? Finally, will we finish our work and overcome the devastations from the floods and tornadoes and rebuild a stronger, greener, more sustainable state? Well, I believe history teaches us time and time again that the Iowa way, the American way, is that when we are faced with great adversity and great challenge, we meet them with bold, decisive action. So this is no time for fear, for partisanship, and for inaction. Instead, let's finish what we started, unafraid of tomorrow and inspired by its possibilities. I will do my part, and I look forward to working with the House and Senate leadership and all of the members. And I know that together we will have a successful session. Good luck in the days ahead, and I look forward to working with each and every one of you. May God bless the great state of Iowa. Let's embrace this future, making this Iowa century with an unwavering faith that our best days are ahead of us. Thank you, and God bless. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, folks. Thank you. Thank you.
Will the committee please come forward and escort Governor Culver from the House chamber?
Thanks.
Thanks again, Jack.
Very good.
And with that, Governor Chet Culver concluding his annual condition of the state address, the third one he's given to a joint session of the Iowa legislature since he's been governor. He's in his final year of this first election term. And he made, you might say, several election year references during that speech. The governor, in previewing today's speech with journalists before, told the Associated Press yesterday he was looking forward to using this statewide forum to, in his words, tell my side of the story, and also adding that he wants to set the record straight. That may be references, of course, to the coming election, the criticism he's already been receiving from the Republican candidates campaigning for the Republican nomination. He, in a word, said that the state of Iowa is resilient. He used that word two or three times in saying the state of Iowa, resilient, and then told all of the positive things about the iJobs program that he had championed throughout the last legislative session. The legislature then bonding for money to fund that iJobs program. And then also the governor today saying that education is going to be a main priority. And one of the surprises, he said in previewing the speech to the governor, to the journalists, I should say, the governor saying that he was going to have some education surprises. Well, perhaps one of those education surprises was the fact that he's asking legislators to restore $100 million in state funding to schools, particularly the struggling rural schools whose budgets were severely impacted by the governor's across-the-board 10% cut in state budget funding. We're going to get a Republican reaction now to today's speech from the leader of the minority Republicans
in the
House of Representatives. Hello, this is Representative Craig Paulson of Linn County, Hiawatha.
Correct.
And he leads the minority Republicans in the House of Representatives. What brought you to your feet today? What did you applaud?
Well, actually not a whole lot. I'd have to think back through it. I mean, there's no question the honoring of Iowans. I think probably the biggest applause line he got was congratulating the Hawkeyes and the Cyclones. The spending he laid out, we'll have to see what that looks like in his budget. My biggest concern in his speech today was, I don't want to misrepresent his words, but what he said was that he's balanced the budget without raising taxes, and that's just simply false.
Why?
Then look at the numbers that he's signed. He's signed increased tax on vehicle registration fees. He's signed the tobacco tax. He's signed increased tax with regard to businesses. He has signed authorized, I guess, unemployment compensation taxes going up. He's proposed increasing taxes on juice and pop. He's proposed other tax increases, and the coup d'etat is the raising of property taxes through his across-the-board cut. So that's just frustrating. I think we need to be honest with Iowans.
What do you think about restoring $100 million in cuts to education K-12 across the state?
Well, I mean, that's a promise we made. It still comes up short, and I think the property taxpayer is going to feel that burden. But to the extent we can mitigate, that's the right thing to do. My hope would be that we'd be able to find that in the budget and get that $100 million through efficiencies and increase or improve state government rather than take it out of the reserve fund.
And that's my next question. If $100 million is restored to K-12 education, another $60 million for preschool, he wants to continue that initiative with $60 million, then where does that come from in an already cash-strapped budget? Where do you think that, have you received any information from the governor in pre-briefings here about where that money will be taken from?
Well, I had no pre-briefing. I got to hear the speech the same time you did. He's going to release his budget at the end of the month, so I assume we'll get those numbers in 20 days. I have not received any pre-briefing on any of that. I honestly don't know how he gets through and does what he committed to today. But, we'll be looking forward to seeing the proposal.
He spent considerable time acclaiming the success of the iJobs project. Did you vote for that?
No, we did not support that. There was three.
Are you surprised that it has done as well as it has, given what the governor was saying today?
Well, I'm not. I think there might have been a little bit of puffing in the speech today. Being from Linn County, I get an opportunity to see some of those things. There's no question that it has made a difference in some individual Iowan's life. But at a cost of, I'm trying to get the exact number, but I think at a cost of something like $500,000 per job, I might be wrong on that number, but it's an extravagant number, and it's extremely expensive for the taxpayer way to do this. We had the money to do all that on an ongoing basis. You know, the legislative Democrats and the governor decided that borrowing for the next 20 years to pay for some of these things was a better way to go.
The governor did not, to the best of my knowledge, mention any social issues today. Same-sex marriage, the Democrats have already said, no, they're not even going to bring that up. I don't know whether there are any other social issues that were mentioned by the governor.
To my recollection, he did not. No, he did not speak about any of those issues.
Well, Thank you very much, Representative Paulson. Enjoyed talking with you.
I
understand that Representative Senator Gronstahl is also standing by, and we'll bring him in. Senator Gronstahl? Senator Gronstahl? You want to come over on this side, please?
Hi, Dean.
What brought you to your feet applauding most of all today?
Well, I think we are all exceedingly proud of the things we've done to make sure children have access to health care coverage in this state. So maintaining our commitment to that. Overall, I think we very much agree with the governor's priorities, K-12 education, higher education. We feel very strongly about that. And clearly, the most important thing we can be doing is job creation in this state.
The iJobs program that the Democrats passed with some bond borrowing money to do that brought quite a lot of success, according to the governor today. Are you surprised that it was as successful as it was, or do you look for even greater success?
Well, I think we recognize that we had a historic responsibility to the communities in particular that were damaged by the floods of, excuse me, of 2008. So I think we're glad that progress is being made in those areas, but I think we also recognize this is a multi-year effort at flood recovery. So we're going to work hard this year to take that next $100 million and allocate it in a way that will continue the recovery in those communities that were hard hit.
Senator Gronstahl, you're acknowledged as probably the most powerful person in the Iowa legislature.
I tell my wife that every day, so...
But with that, I'm asking, because it's significant what you how you answer this next question, where is the money going to come from in the $100 million to restore those cuts to Iowa school districts and the $60 million to continue the early kindergarten, early childhood education initiative?
Well, it's not really $60 million. It's only $15 million more. We've got $45 million already committed, or close to $45. So, listen, the important thing is that we do it. The important thing is that we not squander an opportunity for children. We will find the resources to do this. We'll work with the governor. We do await his budget outline that we'll get at the end of the month to see how he funds this, and the legislature will work closely with the governor to pass. These are the same priorities the Democrats in the legislature have, exactly the same priorities, and we're going to do our best to find a way to fund them.
I asked you what brought you to your feet most in applause. What did you have the most trouble with in this speech today?
My job as majority leader is to help help people figure out a way to come up with 26 votes in the Senate, 51 votes in the House. That's the challenge we face, and so there are some of these things that will be difficult to do, and we probably won't be able to get it all done. So the part that concerns me, it's not the priorities themselves, it's how we get to those. And so we'll work through that. That's what the legislative session's about. You may remember at the start of last year, there were grave, deep reservations about doing a bonding proposal about the disaster recovery. We passed early in the session some cash out of the Economic Emergency Fund, but then we worked long and hard, and it took a long time to develop a consensus, and we, in the end, got an $800 million bonding effort to help both the economy recovery and the flood-damaged communities recover. So the most vexing part of the message today is how we get from point A to point B, and that's my job.
Thank you, Senator Gronstahl.
Sure. Thanks for having me. Great to see you.
Thank you, Senator Gronstahl. Well, that concludes our coverage of the governor's condition of the state address before this joint session of the Iowa General Assembly this morning. I want to remind you that you can see a rebroadcast of the governor's speech tonight on Iowa Public Television starting at 7 o'clock. And at iptv.org, you can see live streaming of our coverage today. And a reminder, too, that to follow what's happening here in the legislature, in all of state government and the federal government, tune into Iowa Press. You can see that weekly, 7:30 Friday nights, 11:30 Sunday morning.
That concludes our coverage of Governor Chet Culver's condition of the state address to the state legislature in Des Moines. Dean Borg anchoring the coverage. We'd like to thank Iowa Public Television for providing us with audio of the broadcast today. This is Iowa Public Radio. The time is 10:55. We go next to today's environment report.
Putting a stop to stealing trees. This is the environment report. I'm Lester Graham.
Despite the construction slump, trees are still worth big bucks. In fact, an individual tree can be worth anything from $100 to thousands of dollars. Tanya Ott has found that timber theft is up because the economy is so down. So, Tanya, how much of a problem is this?
Lester, from New York to Washington State, forest managers say timber thieves have been really active in the last year. In Alabama, they stole more than $500,000 worth of trees. State Forester Linda Casey says landowners might have earmarked that money to pay off the mortgage or to send their kids to college.
If they have timber stolen, they've just lost the only chance that they had to achieve whatever goal that they had designated to use this money for.
Foresters say reckless timber thieves also damage wildlife habitats, Lester. So states are cracking down. This month, Alabama will decide on tough new rules that would make it a misdemeanor to even step on private forest land without permission.
All right. Thanks, Tanya.
Thanks, Lester.
This is the Environment Report. So we're all pretty familiar with corn, corn tortillas, corn flakes, cornbread, and so on. But do we really know corn? Well, maybe you missed the news about a scientific advance that could change how we grow corn forever. We had Sean Ali fill us in.
Virginia Walbut researches corn genetics at Stanford University, and recently she got news that didn't just make her day, it kind of made her decade. Walbut says scientists just finished sequencing genes of an important corn genome.
The genes are like the words in different languages, and what you need is a dictionary that lists all those words. And that dictionary for us is the genome sequence.
Walbut says this research could allow us to breed new corn varieties faster than ever before. But the question is, how will we use this new knowledge? Walbut hopes we'll improve corn's impact on the environment. Just take corn fertilizer.
Of course, adding fertilizer really boosts yield. But the downstream effects are not always great. So there's runoff from farms that contaminates the water supply. Making corn as efficient as possible and using fertilizer, basically just giving enough fertilizer to sustain yield, those would be fantastic goals.
But what else might we do with new genetic research on corn? Industry experts predict we'll create new varieties of industrial-type corn to make better animal feed, ethanol, or even corn-based bioplastics. But some people make the case we should improve food-type corn. One of these is Rainer Bussmann. He's an expert on plant use from the Missouri Botanical Garden. He says in America, most of our corn is starchy, industrial stuff, and that's what we export.
In developing countries, and that's where the majority of starving people is living, we need corn that those people can actually eat. Our normal variety is not particularly popular as a food item because people prefer their traditional corn that simply tastes better or has more variety so that they can use it for different purposes.
Bussmann says making new varieties of food corn will benefit America, too. He says when we grow more types of corn, having that diversity should do a better job of protecting our food from insects or catastrophic plant diseases.
By the way, of the corn we kept in the U.S. last year, more than a third of it was used to make fuel, corn ethanol. That's the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham.
Support comes from the Joyce Foundation and the Great Lakes Fishery Trust. You can find more information and post your comments at environmentreport.org. The Environment Report comes from the University of Michigan.